Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1939. Once again, the makers of Maxwell House Coffee welcome you to an hour of sparkling entertainment from Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios. Tonight's guest list includes Lionel Barrymore, Lou Ayres, Maureen O'Sullivan, George Murphy, Ruth Hussey, Fanny Bryce and Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Douglas MacPhail, Meredith Wilson, and your host for this hour of entertainment, Robert Young. Take it, Bob.
Thank you, Ted. Thank you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We have what promises to be a very diversified program tonight. Meredith Wilson starts us off with one of the new Arabian hits of the day, The Girlfriend of the Whirling Dervish. Start spinning, Meredith. Ladies and gentlemen, Maxwell House takes a real pleasure in introducing a young man who's one of the most popular actors in Hollywood, a favorite with the ladies and also with the men, a dynamic dancer, a grand singer, all in all, the best-liked young fellow who ever left our island to come to Hollywood.
And it is my proud and happy duty to be here, V. Javis. When I left Kilkenny...
Take the damrocks out of your hair and go away. I was introducing George Murphy.
Oh, and faith, and who could tell that? Your introduction fitted me like the county cork fits the bottleneck of the River Shannon, begotta.
Oh, Frank, you don't have to put on that broken-down Irish brogue. The elections are over.
Elections?
Yes, and incidentally, where did you wind up in the senatorial race?
I was scratched. Oh. No. The Republicans have been tampering with my script here. Oh, well, I didn't care about the election anyway. Bob, it was an off year, you know, and I'm saving my real strength for 1940.
Oh, now, don't tell me you're going to run for senator again in 1940.
Oh, senator, a post for a stooge. In 1940, I'm going to answer my country's highest summons.
Oh, Washington is calling.
What?
I said Washington is calling.
Okay, put him on.
Deposit $4, please.
Wrong number.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, Yes, Bob, I'll be in the White House in 1940. Don't worry. I've got my campaign all planned, so I'll wind up in the presidential chair.
If it's as good as your senatorial campaign, you'll wind up in a chair, all right.
Yes, magpie. I shall campaign as our first president campaigned, sir, by living in peace and dignity on my country estate and hunting the fox.
All right. Tell us how you make like a hunter, Mr. Morgan.
Squire Morgan, sir. Justice of the peace, master of the foxhounds, and lord of the manor. Thwackby Castle, Slingsby on Twine, Chunks bite monks, hoop slots, cramps, England.
Oh, so your country estate is in England, eh, Senator? I mean, Squire.
It was. I moved it recently at great expense, stone by stone and tree by tree, every blade of grass. And have located it now on a beautiful 6,000-acre tract, sewers, gas, and sidewalks at Peapac, New Jersey.
Peapac?
Beautiful Peapac. I chose it primarily for its healthful climate, Bob. Wonderful for horses, for dogs, and for men.
How about women?
Oh, the woods are full of them. But you should see my kennels. 150 couples of the finest hunting dogs ever bred. Mm-hmm. I've hunted them all over the country, and no matter what strange place I take them to, they always bag the fox.
Do you use the greyhound?
Yes, it's cheaper to ride on the bus. I've got some wonderful pedigreed dogs, Bob. There's one particular dog I'd like you to meet someday. If she wasn't so particular.
Oh, thanks.
Well, she's a beautiful female Dalmatian, and her name is Outboard Motor.
Outboard Motor?
Yes, you know, pup, 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 pup,
oh.
Pup. You've never seen such a dog, Bob. Five hands high, well sprung, short hocks, high ruff, feathered fetlocks, and an 18-inch rumble seat.
Does she burn much gas?
Most economical dog I ever owned. I raised her from a pump. I mean a pump. A pup. And I taught her to recognize every different kind of game there is. Not only that, but for every animal she has a separate bark.
For instance?
Well, if I take her into the field and she scents a quail, she goes like this. Weep, weep.
Heep, heep. Yeah. You taught her that, huh?
Yes, in 2 weeks. But that's just the quail bark. For rabbits, she does... Wah, wah.
How does she bark for fox?
Zonk! Zonk! Well, so long, but I've got to see a man
here,
about
come
it.
Come here, wait a minute, Garnet. If you're such a terrific dog fancier, there's a fellow I want you to meet. Hey, Murphy. Mm. George, come in.
Hi, Bobby. Well, Bob, I'm glad to see you. Very glad to see you, Bob. How are you, Pop?
Are you addressing me, upstart?
Nah, get off your horse, Squire. You know George Murphy. But maybe you didn't know that George is the smartest amateur dog breeder and trainer in California.
Dog breeder is trainer.
Yes, sir.
Yes, well, I'll be moving along. I've got to see you, fellow.
Frank, come here. Come here.
What?
Tell Murphy about some of the dogs you've trained.
That I've...
Yeah. Go on, Pop.
Oh, well,
just a few.
Well, now that you don't have to, I'm not. Let me see. I don't suppose you ever trained a wolfhound, did you, George?
I trained 2 wolfhounds to be clowns in the circus.
Oh, you did. You never trained any Bedlington terriers, did you?
Taught a 2-month-old Bedlington to read and write once.
Read and write. Well. That's, you know everything about dogs, don't you?
I guess so. I wrote 5 books about them.
Here, Squire. Here, Squire.
Oh, you dogs. Horse, bird, fish. Oh, goldfish! Murphy, do you know anything about training goldfish?
No, I can't say that I do.
Oh, there's an intelligent animal.
Oh. What's the use? It's goldfish now.
Well, if a man hasn't handled goldfish, he has no license to call himself an animal trainer. Yeah.
Let's see your license, buddy.
Well, I...
Let's see your license, buddy.
Well, I suppose you think it's impossible for a human being to train a goldfish. It is.
but I did it.
Hey, Murphy, that's a nice shirt you have on.
I once had a goldfish.
You like it, Bob?
Yeah, he used to swim. I had a go.
I haven't got much taste in size, but I just wear them.
I can't tell these lies unless I have absolute quiet.
Who said that?
All right, Squire. Go ahead with your fish story.
Yes. Well, the thing about this little goldfish, Bob, was his beautiful personality. When I first bought him, he learned to recognize my footsteps and leap to the surface whenever I approached. Later, with infinite care and patience, I taught the little fellow to eat out of my hand.
Go on, Frank.
Well, the first thing you know, the goldfish got so fond of me that when he'd finished eating, he didn't want to go back in his bowl. And so I'd take him with me, put him in my pocket till I got back home.
Bob, the guy has goldfish in his pocket.
And we got silverfish in the rug.
The little fellow spent more and more time in my pocket until one night he refused to return to his bowl at all. What a predicament. I let him sleep with me that night, but the next day I went right out and bought him a birdcage.
A birdcage for a goldfish?
Yeah, oh, you should have seen him up there on his little perch, swinging back and forth, and whistling as if his little heart would burst for joy.
The fish was whistling?
Yeah, just short snatches of familiar. Nothing fancy, but he was perfectly happy in his cage. In fact, I could go away for days and leave him swinging on his perch. Then one day while I was away, it happened.
What happened, Frank?
Well, the little fish fell into the bird bath and drowned. Well, oh. So long, boys.
Here's something all of our listeners always enjoy. A brand new ballad sung for us by Doug McPhail. It's called Midnight on the Trail.
On the trail I'm never lonely. Though the midnight sounds are strange, I'm content and peaceful on my beloved range. It's midnight on the trail, the night wind blowing free, my faithful horse and me riding on. Midnight on the trail, a world so new and strange, my old heart seems to change, riding on. Wide open spaces, the canyon's wall, familiar places, I love it all. And as I watch the sky grow pale, I dream of one delight, to ride again at midnight on the trail. A home where the buffalo roam, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy.
Thank you. Oh, Ted, Ed Pearson.
Yeah, Bob?
Say, I've been answering questions all week about this new and improved Maxwell House coffee. But there's one thing that's got me stumped.
Well, what's that, Bob?
Well, people ask me just what you mean when you say the new Maxwell House coffee's been enriched. Will you tell us just how that's done?
Well, I'm afraid I can't, Bob. You wouldn't expect Maxwell House to publish the secret of the blend that's making so many thousands of new friends for Maxwell House.
Well, what do you mean, secret?
Well, just that. After all, coffee blending is quite an art. You have to have a very keen sense of taste and smell to take coffees from many parts of the world and get a blend so many millions enjoy. Now, for example, it took 12 expert coffee blenders 8 months before they found a way to improve on Joel Cheek's original Maxwell House blend. But what an improvement it is. Friends, you can tell the difference in this new blend the very first cup you try. It's coffee richer, smoother, and more satisfying, we believe, than any coffee you've ever tasted before. And then the remarkable radiant roast process roasts each bean evenly all the way through. So there's no bitter coffee due to parching, no weak coffee due to under roasting. And that means more of true coffee flavor in your cup. So tomorrow, discover for yourself how marvelously clear, smooth, and rich the new Maxwell House really is. Ask your grocer for a pound in the same familiar blue super vacuum can you've always known. It's selling at low prices friendly to your budget. So now's the time to make friends with Maxwell House.
As our special guest tonight, we have two of the nicest people on the MGM lot. And it's a real pleasure to welcome them to our good news show, Marina Sullivan and Lou Ayres.
Hello, Bob.
Well, Marina and Lou, I'm sorry to say I missed the preview of your new picture, Spring Madness. But from what I hear, it's really grand entertainment, and you both turn in excellent acting jobs.
Well, that's nice of you, Bob.
Thanks. Well, how about telling us a little something about the picture?
Well, of course, you know that Spring Madness takes you behind the scenes of a modern college.
That's right. You see, most of the action centers around the spring dance at a girls' university. And Lou comes to see me the day before the big spring dance, which he's supposed to take me to.
Yes, you see, we've been romancing all summer, and if I take her to the spring dance, that sort of officially means that we're engaged.
Yes. So he tells me that he can't go to the dance because he and his roommate have left college and they're going to see the world.
So what do you do? Get me in the gymnasium where the spring dance is going to be held the next night. Just the two of us, moonlight streaming in through the windows. You know, it makes her look even more beautiful that way, Bob. Women's tricks, you know.
I want to know what happens in the gymnasium.
Okay. Well, we'll do the scene as we did it in the picture. Now, Maureen and I in the gym, alone. It's night.
So you've left college, and you're really sailing Monday morning?
6 o'clock.
Really, for 2 years?
Oh, we figure it'll be worth 20 in experience.
Sounds grand. Oh, look, they've waxed the floor for the dance tomorrow night. I'm going to try it.
Don't dance around like that. Careful, you'll fall.
Oh, I have fallen hard. Oh, darling. A girl couldn't go along, I suppose, you know, as a mascot or a dishwasher or something.
Well, that isn't a pleasure trip, dear. It won't be easy. It's hard work. It's a freighter, you know. No place for a woman.
Of course not. The world for men only.
Hmm? Oh, darling, please stop floating in and out of the moonlight like that.
Oh, I think you're going is a marvelous idea. Of course, I'll hate not seeing you.
Well, I'll hate not seeing you. You know, I'm glad there's never been any phony romance between us.
Heavens, no.
But I wanted you to know, as this period of my life begins, I can tell you now, you're the only important girl that has ever come into it. I didn't mean to be funny.
Oh, you were funny, darling. You looked just like a very little boy when you said that. And you sounded... You sounded like the funny papers. Don't be mad.
Thank you. Oh, please, dear, don't cry.
I always cry when I laugh.
You'll be all right. Ever take a look at that little jaw of yours? It'll see you through anything.
It will. You're kind, darling.
It's a bad idea to fall in love before you know what you're going to do in life, isn't it? Don't you think I'm right?
Yes. What about?
About letting yourself fall in love.
Well, of course, darling. And you remember that on your travels. Never fall in love. Fall into the deepest ocean, but never, never fall in love. I certainly never intend to.
Darling, come here.
Oh, please, let me go.
You see, you don't understand. Being married sounds romantic now, here in the moonlight, up in a girl's college, out of the world. But you don't know what it can be like without money. I suppose I couldn't get a job. The chances are I couldn't. Well, how would we live? By having someone slip us a few dollars every once in a while?
I'm sorry, I'm childish. You're right. Only, I keep getting a funny feeling that if you really want to, you don't wait for a miracle to happen. You just do what you want to do, and if you're the right kind of people, it comes out all right. It must come out all right.
But you don't know what you're saying.
Did you know that I've had a job promised me right away? Would you let me slip us a few dollars now and then? Just to keep us alive.
Oh, listen, darling. I'm trying as hard as I can to keep my sense.
Oh, no, of course not. Forgive me. Forget what I said. You're well out of it with me, I can tell you that. I'm frivolous and empty. And there's nothing in my head but the wind rushing through. The wind and the rain and some old leaves.
You're the nicest and sweetest kid that ever lived. That's why I'm not going to let you, well, let me hurt you.
Get out of here. Get some air. Stuffy in here.
And I'm going away because I may as well spend the few bucks I've saved seeing what goes on instead of pounding the pavements looking for a job.
Well, don't explain any more, darling. I'm sure you're trying to protect us from ourselves.
Yes, I am. Let me tell you again.
Yes. Do tell me again. In the open air. Please. Oh, look how beautiful it is. The moonlight, the campus, the old college buildings. I suppose they don't teach us the right things, but I hope when they change everything else, they'll let this stay, even if it's only a reminder of the silly old days and the night we said goodbye. Goodbye, darling.
Why, that was a lovely scene, and you two really do it as it should be done.
Thank you, Bob.
What's more, I'm sure the public will agree when they see you both in Spring Madness. Thank you for coming, Maureen and Lou.
Thank
good night.
You. Good night.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we are going to present an elaborate production. Music arranged by Meredith Wilson, dances staged by George Murphy, in honor of the Gay 90s. 15 beautiful girls in the costume of the period, and 2 beautiful prima donnas as soloists. Every one of the girls in the chorus was selected not only for her beauty, but for her outstanding voice. And I guarantee, among
Bob,
other things, that you...
Bob.
What is it, George?
You know, I rehearsed those chorus girls for 18 hours yesterday.
I know, George. I'm giving you credit.
Well, fine. Then I rehearsed them again today for 6 hours, you know.
I know, George. You did a fine job. That's
thanks
great.
Thanks very much, Bob. There's just one thing, Bob.
What's that?
The girls got so tired rehearsing, they can't come for the show. I'll see you later, Bob.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the 2 beautiful prima donnas who will sing our Gay 90s extravaganza were especially imported from New York and have been trained for 2 years by New York's leading opera coach. I take great pleasure in presenting to you, Mademoiselle...
Bob.
Prima donnas?
Mm-hmm. In the hospital.
Prima donnas?
Mm-hmm. In the hospital.
What happened?
Did you see that long flight of stairs leading down to the stage?
Yes.
Well, they didn't. I'll see you later, Bob.
Well, this is getting to be quite a production. Well, Meredith Wilson has been a great pain for the musical arrangements for this beautiful pageant. And he will conduct it now with a skill and finesse for which he is famous. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you...
Bob, just a minute, Bob.
Wilson?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened to him?
He's one of the prima donnas.
That's all I need. Who's going to be the other one?
I hate to tell you, Frank Morgan. And I'm going to lead the orchestra.
I wash my hands of the whole production.
Okay, here we go. Frank Morgan and Meredith Wilson, these 2 beautiful creatures, present Me and Marie.
On Saturday night when my work is through,
you always call on Marie.
Then we hop on a bicycle built for two and go scorching down to the sea.
After one or two whirls to the German band, we go strolling under the moon.
Till we find a nice spot on the silvery strand, then gee, whiz, how we spoon. You ought to see little me and Marie by the old seaside.
By the ocean, we'd pet and we'd set and we'd pet till we get swept out by the tide.
You may have been to Paris and had both of your eyes open wide, but you ought to see me and Marie by the old seaside.
If you want to see a thing of beauty, you should see me spooning with my little cutie
by the old seaside. For when once we get the proper setting, we begin a petting and we go a petting till we end by getting such an awful wetting from the tide.
First, we talk about this and that a bit. Then we walk about and hug and kiss a bit. Till we finally find a place where we can hide.
Then, until the throwing of the chickens, Frankie and Marie proceed to raise the tickets by the old seaside.
Frank Morgan and Meredith Wilson in the barbershop harmony of the 90s. Now time creeps on.
What?
Look, Ted, on the tray, hot Maxwell House coffee. On the wall, the clock. 20 seconds, 28 seconds to go. Time creeps on.
Oh, I get it. Folks, join us in that friendly custom of ours, our moment of relaxation over a steaming, fragrant cup of the new Maxwell House coffee. Come on, hitch up your chair. Here's your cup and yours. You take cream and sugar? Now, wouldn't it be swell if you could all be here with us? But even if you can't be here in person, you can in spirit. All you need is a steaming cup of the richer-bodied, more fragrant new Maxwell House and the music of Meredith Wilson. We now pause briefly for station identification.
KFI, Los Angeles. Young, and we continue our good news Maxwell House program with Lionel Barrymore, Fanny Bryce, and George Murphy. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for another session with Fanny Bryce as that lovable little demon, Baby Snooks. Well, it looks like Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, is in for a very happy weekend. He's leaving town tonight to attend the annual football classic of his alma mater. As the scene opens, we find Daddy gaily packing his bags. Listen.
Boola, 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 boola. Where's my socks? Oh, here they are.
Hello, Daddy.
Oh, hello, Snooks. Say, what are you doing out of school so early?
I found a new way to fool the teacher.
Fool the teacher? What are you talking about?
I can make her send me home any time I like.
How?
I just sniffed some red ink up my nose.
Well, that's a time trick. That's wonderful.
You like it, Daddy?
Oh, sure. I love it.
I know some more tricks, too.
Well, never mind that. I'll deal with you when I get back.
Where are you going?
I'm going out of town. And you go right upstairs and change your clothes.
Why?
Because your feet are covered with mud and you're tracking up the whole carpet.
Look how I slide around, Daddy.
Stop that. Snooks, I never want you to bring mud in the house again as long as you live.
Bobby's father lets him bring mud in.
I don't care what Bobby's father does. Now get out of here. What are you yelling about?
I wish I had a nice, dirty father like Bobby.
I'm just as dirty as Bobby's father. Leave me alone. Let me finish packing.
La, 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 la. What's in the bottle, Daddy?
What bottle?
The one you're putting in your bag.
Oh. Oh, that's cough medicine. Yeah, awful nasty stuff. I have to take it along, though.
Why?
Oh, because I'm going to a football game, and it gets very cold there.
Daddy, you got an awful bad cold, ain't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I know it, Daddy.
How did you know?
Because I seen 11 more bottles of that medicine in your study.
Ah, yes. Well, you stay out of my study, Snooks. Now, let's see. I guess I have about everything packed. Hmm?
Bye.
Now, what is it?
I know how to spell cough medicine.
Oh, you do?
Uh-huh. G-I-N.
What?
I seen it on a bottle.
Cough. Kid's got eyes like a hawk. Now, you keep your nose out of my bag. Now, look out. I want to put my pajamas in.
Why?
Because I have to sleep on the train. I've reserved a berth.
What's a berth?
Oh, on trains, they call the beds berths. Upper berths and lower berths. I took an upper.
Why?
Because it's cheaper than the lower.
Is it?
Yes. The lower's always much higher than the upper.
Do you feel all right, Daddy?
Yes, I feel fine. What I meant was if you take an upper, it's lower than the lower because you have to get down when you want to get up. And even though the lower's not as high as the upper's lower because it's higher.
Are you sure you feel all right, Daddy?
Now, don't you start driving me crazy. I know what I mean.
Then tell me, Daddy.
I told you. The berth below the one above is the highest because it's the lowest. What are you yelling about?
Because I think you're sick.
Oh, where's that cough medicine? Oh, that's better.
You like it, Daddy?
Of course not. Only reason I'm taking it is because I have to sit in the cheering section. I don't want to get hoarse.
What from?
From cheering. Boy, I used to be dynamite back in the old days. Zing-a-ding-a, 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 wow. Rag-a-dagger, 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 pow. Touchdown, touchdown, we want a touchdown. Ray Keokuk. Now, what's the matter now?
You scared me.
Oh, don't be silly. That's only my old college yell.
Did you play football, Daddy?
No, I was the cheerleader. I was really a big asset.
You don't look like one, Daddy.
Now, what are you talking about? You don't even know what an asset is.
It's a little donkey.
Oh, nonsense. Well, I've got to go. It's almost train time. Goodbye, sir.
Take me with you, Dad.
Oh, don't be silly. Now, kiss me goodbye. Come on. Now, what's the matter with you?
I don't want to stay home.
Snooks, I'm warning you. Don't you spoil this trip for me.
If you don't take me with you, I'll hold my breath till my face turns blue.
Snooks, you stop. Stop that. Oh, please, let me enjoy myself just once, Snooks. Be a good, sweet little girl and let Daddy have a good time.
Now, give me some money.
Money? What kind of talk is that?
If you give me some money, I'll be good.
Well, why can't you be good for nothing, like I am? Yeah, I think. I won't bribe you. You can holler your head off. Goodbye. All right. I hate to do this, but here's a dollar for you.
Thanks, Daddy. I'm going to buy some jelly beans.
Oh, hello, Mother.
What's going on in here?
Oh, Snooks wouldn't let me leave. I just gave her a dollar.
Goodbye, Daddy.
Wait a minute. Just give that dollar back to Daddy Snooks.
Why?
You know very well why. Give it back.
Well, what's she done, Mother?
Oh, she's been terrible all day. This morning, she deliberately pushed Mrs. Moore's new baby off the high chair.
What? Snooks, did you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what on earth for?
Mommy said he was a bouncing baby, and I wanted to see him bounce.
Oh, you little...
Well, after the way he handled that gay 90s production, I don't know why we should give George Murphy another chance. But he's a nice fella, so we'll do it anyhow. Here's George singing the number he does in the 20th Century Fox picture, Hold That Coed. Here I am, doing it.
You have a way with you, darling, after all that we've been through. To to think that I'm here so close to you. Proves that you have a way with you. I made up my mind I'd never light the moon again, but here am I doing it. I made up my mind I'd never thrill to June again, but here am I doing it. You fooled me once before, I'd be so silly to start again, but I'm a fool for romance. Go on, here's your chance to break my heart again. Made up my mind I'd never speak your name again, but here am I doing it. I wouldn't be part of Cupid's little game again, or trust my future to a star. Made up my mind I never would be blue again, never let anyone tell me we were through again. Most of all, I'd never fall for you again. But here we are.
I made up my mind I'd never light the moon again.
But here am I.
Here am I doing it. Never expected ever to thrill to June again.
But here am I.
Here am I
doing it.
You pull me from the stars.
I'd be so silly to start again, but I'm a fool for romance. Go on, here's your chance to break my heart again. I made up my eyes, I never trust your eyes again. But here am I, doing it. I made up my mind I wouldn't believe your lies again, or trust my future to a star. Made up my mind I never would be blue again. Never let anyone tell me we were through again. And most of all, I'd never fall for you again. But darling, here
something, George. What do you think, Snook?
Oh, I like it.
Oh, hello, Snook.
Can I sing that song?
Well, why not? Meredith, will you play another chorus?
Well, why not?
I never thought I'd ever lend my toy again, but here am I doing it. I never thought I'd ever play with toys again, but here am I doing it.
Why, Snooksy, I'd do anything for you. You are the soul of romance to me.
Well, Mr. Murphy, if you really mean that, I wish that you would do a little tap.
Just slide.
It's nice. I like it. It's funny.
Never expected to look at the moon above again.
He never expected to look at the moon above again.
Never thought that Cupid would start to shove again.
I never thought that I would fall in love again.
But here we are.
I like it.
Now, Ted Pearson.
Most people who've ever gone into a grocery store have had an experience similar to this.
My, just smell that coffee, Edith. Isn't it good?
It's grand, Dell. Makes me long for a cup right now.
Let's pause for just a moment. That coffee certainly does smell good. But have you ever stopped to realize that wonderful coffee aroma is coffee flavor being wasted? Flavor that no one will ever get in the cup? Well, the reason this flavor escapes is that the ordinary container the coffee is packed in isn't airtight. And it's air, you know, that steals away coffee flavor. Whether ground or in the whole bean, coffee starts to lose flavor the moment it's roasted, if exposed to the air. And scientific tests reveal that ground coffee packed in ordinary containers loses as much as 45%, nearly half its flavor in only 9 days. But with Maxwell House, the coffee's taken fresh and fragrant from the roasting ovens, packed in the blue super vacuum can from which all air is first removed. Then this can is sealed under vacuum so no air can reach the coffee afterwards. Thus, no air can get in, no flavor can get out. That's why Maxwell House comes to you, not just days fresh, but as fresh as the hour it left the roasting ovens. Why don't you try the new and improved Maxwell House? Not only has the blend been further enriched, but due to the radiant roast process, which roasts each bean all the way through, you'll get much more of the true flavor of the coffee. You'll find it far richer, smoother, more delicious than ever before. So ask your grocer for the new and improved Maxwell House. It comes in the familiar blue super vacuum can, the one way known to science to keep coffee truly fresh.
Meredith Wilson plays a new arrangement of one of Irving Berlin's brightest rhythm numbers, the Piccolino. Theater of the Air offers a distinguished production this evening under the direction of producer Edgar Selwyn, presenting Mr. Lionel Barrymore in the greatest role he ever created on the stage, the role of Milt Shanks in Augustus Thomas' famous drama, The Copperhead. He will be supported by a fine cast, including George Murphy as Philip Manning and Ruth Hussey as Madeline King. Ladies and gentlemen, Maxwell House presents Lionel Barrymore in The Copperhead. Philip Manning is a young Eastern lawyer who has settled in Illinois and entered politics there. He's in love with Madeline King, granddaughter of a local citizen named Milt Shank. As our story opens, Madeline is in politics too, at least in a small way, as she is hoping that the town school board will give her an appointment at a meeting to be held tonight. But apparently there's some kind of undercover opposition to Madeline's candidacy, and we find her now in Philip's office discussing it.
Now, darling, there's nothing to worry about.
Oh, I hope you're right, but I feel somehow there's going to be trouble.
Oh, you're just excited. Mother's going to see two members of the board now. And when she gets through talking to them, you're as good as in.
Colonel Hardy and Mr. Gillespie are pretty stubborn men when they want to be.
Oh, nonsense. And another thing, darling. How about a kiss?
Philip.
Hello, Mother.
Madeline, I'm afraid I've got bad news for you.
I knew it.
What is it?
I've just talked to Colonel Hardy and Mr. Gillespie, and... well, you simply haven't a chance.
What? Well, that's absurd.
It's not absurd. Madeline has the bad luck to be the granddaughter of a copperhead. He's been an outcast in this town for 40 years.
Copperhead? What are you talking about, Mother?
I can explain that, Philip. During the war between the states, my grandfather lived here in a northern state. But he was a southern sympathizer. and refuse to fight.
Well, what of it?
It's still a live political issue in this town, Philip.
Mother, I don't see how you can take this seriously. The war's been over for 40 years now. What difference can it make?
Your mother's right, Philip.
Well, I don't believe it. And even if it's true, I'm going to fight that boar tonight and get you the job.
Philip, will you do me one favor?
Well, certainly, Mother.
Will you let Colonel Hardy explain to you how the town feels about this Copperhead business?
Well, I don't care how the town feels. It's not right. Mr. Shanks is as decent a man as I ever met, and it doesn't make any difference what side he was on.
Now, please be quiet for a moment. Colonel Hardy?
Yes, Mrs. Manning?
Mr. Gillespie, will you come in here, please?
Yes, sir. Hello, Philip. Afternoon, Miss Madeline.
Gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Colonel Hardy, I wish you'd tell Philip just what this Copperhead business is going to do to Madeline's chances with the school board, and also to his own career.
My career?
Philip's career?
Yes.
Now, listen, son. You're in the legislature now. You're hoping to run for Congress in the fall. If you get mixed up in a fight in behalf of Milt Shanks now, you can say goodbye to any political future in the state of Illinois.
Colonel Hardy, I haven't time to listen to bedtime stories. If you can give me
now,
a
wait
reason
just a minute,
why...
son. I don't want to argue with you. But I'm telling you for your own good. Milt Shanks and his whole family are political poison in this state. Am I right, Gillespie?
All I know is what the school board is going to do tonight. I'm chairman, and I'm going to vote against this young lady. And I know five other members have swore they'd do the same. Come on, Colonel. Let's get along about our own business.
Yes, sir.
Wait a minute.
Philip, please. This isn't your fight. Don't make enemies because of me.
What's the matter, honey? You haven't eaten any supper.
I'm not hungry, Grandpa.
I've been watching ever since you come in. You're not yourself. Well, you're not worried about that school board meeting tonight?
Oh, no, Grandpa. I've decided I won't want that teaching job after all.
What?
I'd rather not have it.
Why, Madeline, who you been talking to? Somebody must have said something.
No, I just changed my mind.
Seems mighty sudden. Does Philip know about this?
Yes,
well,
he knows.
Well, disappointed?
I don't know. I'm not going to see him anymore anyhow.
Now, Madeline, honey, if you had a mother, you'd tell her what's on your mind now. But you haven't got one, so you'll just have to tell me. What is it, child?
Oh, there's nothing you can do, Grandpa. But Philip's bound to get in trouble if he fights the school board for me. So I'm not going to ruin his life. That's all.
I'm beginning to smell what's happened. Philip's been talking to Tom Hardy, huh? Or Newt Gillespie.
Yes. Oh, Grandpa.
Oh, no, honey. Don't cry. I ain't never said nothing to anybody about this thing. I figured I'd save my breath. But if it means your happiness, I'll talk.
What do you mean?
Well, you'll find out. Sit down, Hardy.
Man, I ain't been in this house for 40 years. I don't see why I ought to sit. Now,
yeah, suit yourself. Sit down, Gillespie.
No sense to order, as far as I can see, but I'm willing to listen to you.
Sit by Madeline, will you, Phyllis?
Yes.
A short horse is soon curried, and my business won't keep anyone long. Colonel Hardy and me was boys together. Our congressman gave me an appointment to West Point, but Tom Hardy ought to have it. Besides, it wasn't convenient for me to go to West Point just then, so I resigned it for him. Before that, we went together to a school where Abe Lincoln come and talked to us. We both knowed him from that time on till he was elected president. Ain't that so, Colonel Hardy?
Yes.
Never mind that. If you've got anything to say, say it.
Just a minute, Gillespie. You see that mask of Lincoln on the mantelpiece? Well, Hardy and me was together at his house before he started for Washington. A sculpture man was there to take a plaster Paris model of Lincoln's face. Most folks think this is a after-death thing, but Colonel Hardy and me saw it took. Just throwed the soft plaster on his face and let it get hard. Lincoln sitting in the armchair, like you are. Hand me that box, Madeline. Thanks, child. In this box where I have my letters and keepsakes is a model of Lincoln's hand. The hand that wrote the emancipation of slavery. The sculpture man sent me these himself, so they're genuine. Look at my hand beside his. Bigger man than me every way. All the statues of Lincoln nowadays is copied from this. So you see, we know them. Well, then the war broke out. Hardy took a vow to support his country. I took one to destroy it. Hardy's company marched off. My Joey, only 16, along with him. His mother leaned against the fence, and the women fanned her. And Joey, he looked like a soldier. That's his picture there over the mantelpiece, Philip. You was probably thinner at 16 yourself.
Yes, sir, I was.
I was peeking through some bushes. Could almost touch them as they marched by. Blue eyes. His mother never said a word. Cried quite a spell. Well, us knights of the Golden Circle...
Copperhead!
Golden Circle! We sent help to the south all we could, and we pisoned kettle. I went to Richmond, Virginia, twice. Time went on, and Vicksburg come. And one night a fella come into town here and hitched. When'd you hear from Joseph, he... Last week, he says. How was he, says he? All right, he says. And he says, Joe's dead. I can see your grandma yet, crying by the well, petting the corner at where Joe had been. By and by, I leaned over to touch her, but she drawed away, trembling and saying, Milkshanks, you're unclean. His mother. Well, 2 or 3 days she was pining, face against some letters he'd wrote home. Then, the two, her and Joey, was buried the same time. At the church, instead of the trouble I expected from the neighbors, they was all strange-like and kind. Except when I went to look in the black coffin under the flag. Where Joey was. Newt Gillespie took me by the arm and... Well, you tell him, Newt, what you said to me.
I have told him more than once.
Well, tell her. She never heard you.
I'd give my word before he died.
His word to Joey?
Yes. He said, if you take me back, don't let him see me. If he'd only fought on the other side, I'd have been proud, even if he'd been the one that shot me. But no copperhead. And I did. Right in the church. I just took him by the arm and said it was his particular last request. Quiet-like, as I'm talking now, and led him out of the church. And I'd do it again.
Oh, Grandpa.
That left only little Elsie, your ma. And she was so little I couldn't leave her alone. And I was carrying her on my arm. Newt Gillespie was the only man that spoke to me. And in the whole United States. Yes, in the whole world. Only one man wrote to me. Well, I kept his letter, naturally. Here it is. I'm going to ask Colonel Hardy to read it.
Why, what's this?
Careful, Colonel. It keeps safe with me.
Oh, well, all right, Tom.
Read it, and then that's all I got to say. It wasn't for Madeleine and Philip, and I know they're loving each other. And
we'll separate.
Great heavens, man. Say, who's crazy, you or I, Milkshanks? Milkshanks.
What is it, Colonel?
Read it, Colonel Hardy.
Yes. Executive Mansion, Washington, April 11th, 1865. Mr. Milton Shanks, Millville. Dear Milt, Lee's surrender ends it all. I cannot think of you without a sense of guilt, but it had to be. I alone know what you did, and even more, what you endured. I cannot reward you. Man cannot reward anything worthwhile. There's only one who can. I send you a flag handkerchief.
This is it.
It is not new, but you will prize it the more for that. I hope to shake your hand sometime. Your friend, A. Lincoln.
Lincoln?
Abraham Lincoln.
Lincoln. Colonel, do you recollect the time you drove me to the train in March of 61?
Very well. You went to look at cattle.
That's what I told you. I was called to Washington by Lincoln. And 2 days later, at night, in his library, White House, he walked over toward the window, and without turning around, he says, "Milt?" That's funny. I remember a clock ticking on the mantelpiece. I says, "Mr. President, Milt, how much do you love your country?" "Well, I calculate I'd die for it," I says. "Oh, thousands of boys is crying to do that." Then he turned around. "Would you give up something more in life?" "Try me," he says. The president run his hands through his hair and went on. "It means to be odious in the eyes of men and women. To eat your heart out, alone, for you can't tell your wife, her child, her friend." "Go on," he says. "The Southern sympathizers is organizing in our state really worse than the soldiers. I want you to join them Knights of the Golden Circle, to be one of them, a copperhead, their leader, if you can. I need you, Milt. Your country needs you." Hadn't been 2 minutes since he was laughing, but he lifted his hands, and it seemed we was the only folks in the world. And that clock, it's funny I remember that. "I'll do it," I says. He took a little flag out of his pocket, like as not this very one, and put it on the table, like I'm putting it. "As chief magistrate of the nation, I muster you into the nation's service," he said. He took my hand and laid it where the blue is, and all the stars, and put his hand over mine, and said, "Nothing. Just looked in my eyes and looked." Well, I joined them. The Knights of the Golden Circle, what you folks calls copperheads. It was terrible when I couldn't tell the boy when he marched off. 16, you know. Blue eyes.
Oh, Grandpa, dear.
Well, it ruined the governor that pardoned me out of Joliet where I was convicted to. But I always figured he had his orders from Washington, same as me, and couldn't talk about it. And even when Vicksburg come and Joe was dead, well, the war wasn't over.
Oh, but confound it, Milton, all these years we've despised you. Why haven't you told?
Told who? Couldn't tell Joey. Or his mother. And with them gone, everything else seems so, oh, so useless. It's only now when it's separating her and Philip and is spoiling her election to the school board.
Her election? Doggone it, Milt, that story'd elect the wooden Indian.
Come here, Milt.
Why, Newt, what are you trying to do?
Take that coat off, Milt. This coat I'm wearing don't belong to me.
Why, no, not your Grand Army coat.
Get in it. Here's the hat. There. Bring him down to that meeting tonight. I may be a darn fool, but by gosh, I ain't no skunk.
Oh, Grandpa.
The blue.
Put the hat on, Milt.
And the corner on it. If there was only a looking glass. Hey, you sure it's all right now for me to wear this?
I'm darned if I know. Who's got a better right, Milt?
Thank you, Tom. Lord, it's wonderful to have friends again.
Thank you.
we've ever had on the MGM Theater of the Air. And now, here's Mr. Lionel Barrymore as himself.
Tomorrow, the world will celebrate Armistice Day. 20 years have passed in which the rulers of nations have had time to digest the lesson of those 4 horrible years of heartache and strife. Now, here's my personal prayer, and I know it must be the prayer of millions and millions of other people all over the world. Please, God, let every day be Armistice Day. I hope that some of you, somewhere, have said amen.
Next week, Joan Crawford, Margaret Sullivan, Melvin Douglas, Tony Martin, Fanny Bryce, Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Meredith Wilson, and yours truly. This is Bob Young saying goodnight until next Thursday. Be sure and see MGM's new thrilling romantic drama, The Great Waltz. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
This is KFI Los Angeles.